embassy there or the Argentine embassy there. Why don't you summarize the significance of this moment, even in terms of climate change?
This is hugely, hugely important. We are in a battle around the world between those who want to keep the world habitable and those who want to just exploit it until there's nothing left. And Brazil is one of the frontline states. The global south is bearing the brunt of this. The global north absolutely has more responsibility and should be doing a lot more. And it's politicians on the far right, of which Bolsonaro, Jair Bolsonaro, is one of the figureheads, at least in Latin America, that are pushing forward this extractivist agenda, come what may. This leads them very often towards authoritarianism, and we're now seeing that, of course, in the United States as well. And so I think it's hugely significant that the Brazilian courts stepped up, intervened, and have put Jair Bolsonaro behind bars. And what's really important is it's not just Jair Bolsonaro. Several of Brazil's top military generals have also been sentenced. And this is so historical. It was up until 1985, Brazil had a military dictatorship. And after that, there was a kind of an amnesty.
We have 30 seconds.
Oh, okay. Just look, it's really important that when people break the rules, they're punished for it. And that someone like Jair Bolsonaro, who while he was president, oversaw
this
the...
This is KBOO Portland.
Are you ever listening to a new pop song or reminiscing over an old, well-loved album? And you catch a melody or a lick that reminds you of a different album altogether? Next thing you know, you're reading about the profound influence of synthesizers on rock and roll? Well then join me, Katie Zip, for Double Groove, a genre-bending show where we'll take a deep dive into an album, exploring the influences, history, and take a few quirky turns, all for maximum enjoyment and understanding of the music we love. Every second Friday of the month, 8 to 10 p.m., it's Double Groove with Katie Zip, only on your community radio station, KBOO, on 90.7 FM.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, a proposed detention center fee is discussed at Portland City Council.
Oregon Food Bank tries to counter growing food scarcity after SNAP benefits were delayed this month.
And in international news, Indigenous representatives reflect on the outcomes of COP30.
Good evening. This is KBOO Evening News for Monday, November 24th, 2025. I'm Cheryl Denise.
And I'm Dave Johnson. At Portland City Council on Wednesday, November 19th, Councilor Annalita Murillo and Councilor Mitch Green proposed a policy that would introduce an annual fee from private owners of detention facilities in Portland. This policy is intended to alleviate the cost of these facilities from the people of Portland. This proposal would be applicable to the current detention facility on Southwest McAdam, as well as all the potential future facilities that the federal government may open up. The proposal references that PPB, Portland Public Police Bureau, reports spending over $300,000 on activities around the Southwest McAdam Detention Facility in fiscal year 2025 alone. This $300,000 does not include the cost of the surrounding apartments paying for cleanups to clean the facilities due to the residue left by tear gas, the cost of the elementary school's expedited relocation away from the area, and the high levels of pollutants found in the surrounding river due to the chemicals dispersed in the detention facility. At the meeting, Councilor Murillo outlined how she and Green had designated the policy to secure the cost of repair to the city due to damage by the facility from other means that taxpayer dollars. If the proposal passes, the city administrator would administer the fee, adjusting annually for inflation and working with PPB, Bureau of Environmental Services, and Portland, or BPS, and other relevant bureaus, setting a fee amount that reflects the real public cost created in detention facilities. The potential fee amount has not yet been set.
The proposed detention facility also sets a standard for a prohibited nuisance of all detention facilities. This section says that a private property owner who owns a property that a detention facility exists on, quote, may not cause, allow, or fail to prevent, end quote, release of chemical residues or substances beyond the perimeter of the property that might hinder public safety or enjoyment of the surrounding area. This section also outlines that the city can investigate potential violations and may issue penalties. The fee would be spent on city administration expenses, environmental remediation, public health services, and assistance to households and businesses affected by safety or environmental concerns caused by the detention facility. Many Portlanders testified on this issue, overwhelmingly in support. This measure would not revoke the permit for the ICE facility in South Portland, but this development could deter federal government from making new facilities, and it would hold landlords responsible for some of the pollution and safety concerns that many Portlanders have about the detention facility. During the meeting, Councillor Canal brought to light that the owner of the Macadam's facility, Stuart Lindquist, was given an extension to come up with information that he needed for an investigation that the city instigated into violations of the permit that allows ICE to operate in that facility. His deadline is now December 1st. The item was passed to a second reading. The next city council meeting will be on Wednesday, December 3rd from 9:30 a.m. to 12:30. The upcoming agenda has not been released as of today, Monday, November 24th.
The Oregon Ducks return to the top five of the Associated Press Top 25 college football poll yesterday. Oregon jumped over the idle Ole Miss Rebels to number five, their highest ranking since being third in the October 5th poll. Ohio State, Indiana, and Texas A&M remained the top three teams for a sixth straight week, and Georgia was number four for the second week in a row. The Ducks strengthened their chances with a 15-point victory over their number 16 Southern Cal, extending their winning streak to five games. The ACC's Georgia Tech, beaten 42-28 at home by Pittsburgh, took the biggest fall, dropping eight spots to number 23. Number 20, James Madison of the Sun Belt Conference remained the highest-ranked group of five team in the poll. The Dukes, up one spot from a week ago, came from behind to beat Washington State 24-20 and stand at 10-1. Five teams from the state of Texas are ranked for a second straight week. Texas has not had five teams in the back-to-back polls since 2016. This weekend, undefeated number one Ohio State plays at Michigan. The Wolverines have lost four straight, but have not dropped five in a row to their rivals since they lost six straight from 1922 to 1927. Number three, Texas A&M plays Texas Friday. The Aggies lock up a spot in the SEC title. Title game with a win. Surprising number 12 Vanderbilt travels to meet the Tennessee Volunteers. The Commodores are going for a 10th win for the first time in program history. They're 12-41-2 all-time in Knoxville, and only four of those wins have come in the last 50 years.
After Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, SNAP, benefits were delayed this month and more cuts are planned for January, Oregon Food Bank is expanding its efforts to counter growing food scarcity in the state. In Malheur and Harney counties, OFB has partnered with local grocery stores that also rely on SNAP dollars. Isabel Charlie has more on the story.
The recent interruption of SNAP benefits has affected thousands of Oregonians and pushed some food banks to get creative to keep their communities fed, including launching a program called Groceries for Good. Oregon Food Bank's Ontario location is partnering with two local grocery stores to give shoppers the chance to purchase $10 pre-filled Groceries for Good bags. Lindsay Grosvenor, Regional Oregon Food Bank Manager in Ontario, explains the groceries are sold at retail price, so the store still makes its profit while the food goes to the food bank to distribute.
The very first day, as we were packing those bags, a customer of Red Apple came in and said that he wanted to buy 200 bags, which is $2,000 worth. And I said, I haven't even put 200 bags together yet. In times like this, people come together to support each other.
The Ontario Food Bank serves Malheur and Harney counties, some of the poorest in the state. In Malheur County, one in four residents faces food insecurity, and child poverty is double the state average at 34%. Grosvenor says the impact of cuts and disruptions in SNAP benefits don't end with the families who rely on them. She notes in Malheur County, one in four people uses SNAP, bringing $1.5 million into the area each month through grocery purchases.
If 25% of our residents receive SNAP, that's about that same amount of income that those grocers are relying on to keep their doors open and to pay their employees.
Grosvenor also encourages holiday shoppers to support local businesses this season over online retailers or big box stores. For Public News Service, I'm Isabel Charlet.
The abrupt cancellation of immigration protection for Somalis sparks alarm in Minnesota and intensifies political tensions, while IRS policy changes, healthcare costs, and foreign policy debates sharpen concerns nationally. With that story and more, it's Farah Siddiqui with 2025 Talks.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
We believe the reason why TPS was terminated is because of online rhetoric to score political points and scapegoat the Somali immigrant population here in Minnesota.
Jaylani Hussein, who leads the Muslim civil rights group CARE Minnesota, says a sudden administration decision to strip temporary protected status from Somalis is landing hard in the nation's largest Somali community. He warns that increasing misinformation is raising real fear in a state with just short of half of U.S. mosque attacks last year. President Donald Trump's order ends TPS immediately for about 700 migrants nationally. Trump calls Minnesota a hub of loosely monitored immigrant money transfers. At a Minnesota press conference, Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem said they're following longstanding immigration law that requires TPS get periodic review.
TPS is a program that was always meant to be temporary. We plan to follow the process that's in law to evaluate TPS and how it applies to different countries and individuals.
Critics argue Somalia remains unsafe and the move could separate U.S.-born children from their parents. Minnesota's Democratic governor says Trump is targeting an entire community to distract from his political problems. The administration is defending a new peace framework for Ukraine. Secretary of State Marco Rubio calls current talks in Geneva positive, but lawmakers from both parties say the framework reads like a Moscow wish list. They question why the president has set a Thanksgiving deadline for it. On social media, Trump has again accused Kiev of being ungrateful for U.S. support. In Texas, the fate of a newly redrawn congressional map remains uncertain after a week of conflicting court rulings. The map targets several Latina-majority districts that help shape the 2024 outcome, and both parties say the stakes are high heading into next year's midterms. The White House is ending the IRS Direct File program in 2026, reversing the free tax filing tool launched under the Inflation Reduction Act. Adam Rubin with the Economic Security Project says it's enormously popular and saves taxpayers billions.
It could save existing tax filers $8 billion in filing fees, and it could help people who are missing out on tax credits claim an additional $12 billion more.
The administration says as part of its economic focus, it wants to replace direct file with a broader, quote, affordability-focused system. But consumer and government watchdog groups say the government's failure to deal with rising health insurance premiums doesn't make that look promising. Brian Lemick with Defend the Vote says political dysfunction is making it harder for Congress to address affordability.
Instead of making laws and legislating, they close the government. They limit the ability to make sure families have affordable health care.
I'm Farah Siddiqui for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth report on the No Kings protests from Saturday, November 22nd, from our reporter Dave Johnson. At 6, it's Labor Radio. At 6:30, it's Prison Pipeline. Then at 7, Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather will be a low of 39, with some light rain for the rest of the day. And tomorrow we will get a high of 44 and a low of 43 degrees. 2 degrees of variation. It is likely to rain all day. Today in history, 1859, English naturalist Charles Darwin publishes On the Origin of Species, radically changing the view of evolution and laying the foundation for evolutionary biology. The quote of the day is from Charles Darwin. He said, quote, "If the misery of the poor be caused not by the laws of nature, but by our institutions, great is our sin," end quote.
This year, 5 Native Americans were among 29 people named Bush Fellows. The Bush Foundation provides up to $150,000 over 2 years for their fellows to build on their leadership skills. A study aims to shed light on the hidden impacts of domestic violence in Native communities. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. This year, 5 Native Americans were among 29 people named Bush Fellows. The Bush Fellowship provides up to $150,000 over 2 years for the fellows to build on their leadership skills. In the second of 5 profiles, Brian Bull of Buffalo's Fire highlights what a South Dakota University administrator wants to accomplish.
John Little is the Director of Native Recruitment and Alumni Engagement at the University of South Dakota. The Standing Rock Sioux tribal member works with many Native students and wants to get more fired up for higher education. He says part of getting many ready is adapting from small Midwestern rural communities to large campuses with many academic offerings.
It is a shock factor for a lot of students.
Boosting Native enrollment and retention will be a challenge. In a census review shared by the Post-Secondary National Policy Institute, data showed that nearly 26% of Natives age 18 to 24 were enrolled in college, compared to 39% of the overall U.S. population. Additionally, undergraduate enrollment dropped 40%, while graduate enrollment fell 18% for Native students. Little says he's been lucky to have parents who've supported his academic goals, including a master's degree from USD and a PhD from the University of Minnesota.
Especially my mom has been really influential in me going to school and has been there every step. Not every student that I work with in South Dakota has that, or maybe they do, but they're first gen, so they just don't know what that looks like.
Little says he'll research college fairs and regional programs to develop stronger preparation initiatives for future students. For National Native News, I'm Brian Bull.
A study aims to shed light on the hidden impacts of domestic violence in Native communities. The Mountain West News Bureau's Daniel Spalding reports on the effort to understand the unrecognized brain injuries many survivors are living with.
The Urban Indian Health Institute survey aims to find out how common traumatic brain injuries are among Native survivors of domestic and sexual violence. More than 80% of Indigenous women have experienced violence in their lifetime. According to Abigail Echohawk, the Institute's director, many survivors of domestic and sexual violence suffer from brain injuries that never get diagnosed or receive proper care.
They deserve justice, they deserve safety, and they deserve to get the treatment that they need when they've been impacted by traumatic brain injury.
The goal of the survey is to ensure survivors get the right care and support through programs and policies designed to help them heal. The survey began in October and will remain open through January 2026. I'm Daniel Spalding.
Another Arizona tribe has been picked to keep a newer holiday tradition going by supplying this year's Capitol Christmas tree. KJZZ's Gabriel Pietrazio has more.
For 3 years running under Governor Katie Hobbs, the state has taken bids from tribes, beginning with the White Mountain Apache in 2023, then the San Carlos Apache last year. Now the Capitol tree will come from the people of the Tall Pines, or Wallapai.
And I hope no matter who is in the office of the governor, that this holiday spirit of bringing all our communities together continues.
Wayne Clark is chairman of the 2,300-member Wallapai tribe north of Kingman.
Oddly enough, the one tree that has been selected, it's close to, I want to say, about 30 feet, was not one of the three options, to be honest. Councilman Imus did a quick prayer. He turned to the right and said, "That's the tree." We all looked, And it was a moment of awe.
The tribe will bless the tree before trucking it more than 200 miles to the state capitol from their reservation hugging the Grand Canyon's west rim. It will be on display by December 1st. For National Native News, I'm Gabriel Pietrazio.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Several different organizations are planning nationwide boycotts for this week, aiming to target large corporations and show our collective power through hitting the billionaires where it hurts, their box store wallets. Four main boycotts are taking place this week, blocking the notoriously big spending days of Black Friday. The No Kings or We Ain't Buying It campaign is specifically targeting three corporations: Target, for catering to the current administration's dismissal of DEI and cutting their own DEI programs; Home Depot, for aiding ICE; and Amazon, for cutting corporate tax deals. The People's Union USA is leading a more expansive boycott of big box stores and online retailers, encouraging only buying from small businesses. Another movement that is going by the slogan, Blackout the System, is leading the charge against all corporate systems, asking participants to avoid work, shopping, and canceling streaming services. Only shopping at small businesses. The mass boycott is organized to essentially do what Blackout the System is doing, but they are aiming to lead a blackout starting on November 25th through December 2nd. Though each boycott has a slightly different focus, they are all oriented around keeping money away from large corporations and taking a stand against the current administration. The boycott encourages people to find new ways of relaxing and celebrating with one another than supporting capitalist and authoritarian regimes.
On Saturday, November 22nd, 31 people were arrested in front of Alligator Alcatraz. Members of the Sunrise Movement demanded the shutdown of the Chrome Detention Center, protesting the aggressive detention and deportation policies of the Trump administration. The protesters held images of people who have died in federal custody with signs that said, quote, "ICE kidnapped my neighbor." According to the American Immigration Council, 2025 was the deadliest year for ICE detainees since 2004. According to Trace reports on immigration, as of November 16th, there were 65,135 people actively in detention. 73.6% of the current detainees have no criminal convictions, and many of those convicted only committed minor offenses. According to The Guardian, during just over 1 month of federal shutdown time alone, ICE detained 54,000 people and reportedly deported 56,000 during this time. In fiscal year 2024, the ICE website reports that they detained over 277,000 people. All of the people arrested and charged with trespassing at the detention facility, including some Sunrise members from Portland, Oregon, have been released from custody.
The federal government just announced 2026 Medicare cost increases. Insurance costs are going up quickly all over the country. Suzanne Potter has more on the story.
The feds just announced 2026 cost increases, and Medicare Part B premiums are going up almost 9.7%, or about $18 a month. That will eat up part of next year's annual Social Security cost of living adjustment. In addition, the deductible for a hospital admission under Medicare Part A will go up by $60. Tatiana Fasciu is with the nonprofit California Health Advocates Senior Medicare Patrol.
Not only do you have to think about your potential healthcare spending dollars for next year, but also how is that Social Security income going to offset any increases in your Medicare costs?
Part B premiums will rise by $17.90 for a total cost of $202.90. On the upside, the Social Security cost of living increase for 2026 means checks will go up by approximately $56. Meanwhile, older Americans have some choices to make about their Medicare coverage. Medicare open enrollment runs about three more weeks through December 7th for people who want to change their Medicare Part D or Medicare Advantage plan. Fessu says the airwaves are flooded with ads for plans with all kinds of goodies, but says people really need to be sure the plan includes your local doctor and covers your medications.
Don't succumb to the enticements that you see on television with free spending cards for groceries. Be more specific as to your needs, your finances, and your providers.
The state-funded Health Insurance Counseling and Advocacy Program, known as HICAP, provides free and objective information and counseling about Medicare. Get the list of HICAP offices on the website, cahealthadvocates.org. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
Braver Angels, a group based out of Idaho, is encouraging folks to have better conversations when spending time with loved ones during their holiday. Eric Tigatoff has more on that story.
Civil conversations are encouraged this week as people gather with their families for Thanksgiving. It's Better Conversations Week, which puts a spotlight on the need to have more meaningful conversations with people, especially on heated political matters. One group that's focused on bridging the political divide and having better conversations is Braver Angels. Damian Prinitz is co-chair of the organization's Idaho State Alliance and represents the conservative position. He suggests people who are struggling to speak with family members of different political views engage in the LAP technique, listening, acknowledging, pivoting, and offering your perspective.
After you've given what we call a turning signal, the change in the conversation, then you provide your perspective, which kind of makes it a little bit smoother of a conversation process.
Prinitz says Braver Angels offers skills for having intelligent and vulnerable conversations while still maintaining relationships with people whom we disagree, which can be especially challenging among family members over the Thanksgiving holiday. Rob Hansen is the Idaho Braver Angels coordinator representing the liberal perspective. He and Prinitz work together to help people converse and disagree respectfully. Hansen says the country is deeply divided right now.
The assassination of Charlie Kirk triggered a lot of interest in Braver Angels. People were reaching out saying, there's got to be a better way. We have to be able to talk. We can disagree vehemently on issues, but still look for the humanity in the other person, treating them with dignity and respect and honesty.
Hansen says people should practice how they're going to converse with family members they might argue with over the holidays.
Make it your goal to learn something new and try to find something in common and look for the good in that person. As family members, we've got so much history of judging and everything else we do with each other, but to try to turn it around, looking for something good and something you have in common that can make a difference.
For Northern Rockies News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
The U.S. could throw away 320 million pounds of food this Thanksgiving, but you can reduce waste by following these steps. Dr. Anthony Lizowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. For many families, Thanksgiving does not feel complete without turkey, stuffing, potatoes, pies, grandma's ambrosia salad, and more. It adds up to a lot of food, much of which can end up in the trash.
Often at the end, that host is sitting there with pounds and pounds and pounds of food that they couldn't possibly consume by themselves.
Sarah Burnett of the nonprofit ReFed says food waste is bad for the climate. When it rots in a landfill, it emits methane, a potent global warming gas, and producing and transporting all that food creates a lot of carbon pollution. ReFed projects that this Thanksgiving, people in the U.S. will throw out about 320 million pounds of food. And they estimate that will cause as much carbon pollution as driving 190,000 gas vehicles for a year. So to reduce food waste this holiday, Burnett suggests cooking a little less of each dish. With so many options on the table, most people take smaller portions anyway. And invite your guests to bring takeout containers to share the leftovers.
Everybody loves, you know, a good after Thanksgiving meal of your favorite sides.
So you can host a delicious feast and help protect the climate, too. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
Last Saturday, the 30th annual Climate Summit closed with no mention of fossil fuels in their final agreement. COP 30 was held in Belém, Brazil, with the intention of bringing focus to the Amazon rainforest, which is essential to the sustainability of our climate and the indigenous peoples who have been fierce actors in protecting it. At the end of COP30, many say they were not impressed with the lack of action following leadership's lip service. A member of Wisdom Keepers' delegation of Kichwa Otalavo descent, Talia Urina Chichwell, said, quote, "This was a COP where we were visible but not empowered," end quote. Though some small wins were accomplished at the summit, including a land acknowledgement at the beginning of the main political document, there were no tangible wins against fossil fuels. Hopes were high to create a plan to phase out fossil fuels, but no such plans were solidified or agreed upon. Mindaha Bastida, an Atomic Tolmek member of a Wisdom Keepers delegation, wished that countries had pushed harder to phase out oil, gas, and coal, and to, quote, not see nature as merchandise, but to see it as sacred, end quote.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Monday, November 24th, 2025. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-801-1378. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Dave Johnson and Josh Salem. The producer is Hannah Francis, and our engineer is Jasmine Moss. Special thanks to Antonio Gonzalez, Isabel Charle, Farah Siddiqui, and Dr. Anthony Lizowitz. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.